Good morning.
Your energy is sky high today, and I'm loving it. I'm loving that for you. My name is Jen, and I need to check in so I don't check out.
Welcome to the What's the Temp podcast. My name is Bettina, and I am coming in hot. And that means a whole lot today. Today's podcast title is Future Vision. And I need to start Future Vision with a little bit of a look into the past, if that's okay.
That works for me.
Let's start with our temp check. And our temp check today is called Hope Temperatures. And I want to start this one off because 9 days ago, I lost my youngest brother. And that was a kick in the teeth for the entire family because, you know, of course, death is a surprise, you know, most times. Yeah. But this episode is meaningful to me because, so for the first 7 days, I went on this emotional roller coaster, a total emotional roller coaster. There was sadness, there was frustration, there was anger, there was judgment, there was guilt. And then finally yesterday was the first day I felt back to myself. And so I got up and started, you know, running errands and doing things that I needed to do for the house. And so as I was coming out of the grocery store, walking towards the car, there was this purple pickup truck, right? Again, I'm on a high note. Yesterday was the first day I felt good. So I'm coming out of the store and I see this purple pickup truck. And then I looked at the purple pickup truck and it had one headlight, and immediately the Wallflowers came to mind. So I'm driving home singing, come on, drive a little. Nothing is forever. It's got to be something better than in the middle. Cause me and Cinderella, we put it all together. We can drive it home. With one headlight. Jen, you know you were supposed to join in on that, right? But I don't even know. But that was me. And I felt like that joy came from my baby brother, BJ. Because he was joy incarnate. You know what I mean? It didn't matter what stage or station in life he was. But that baby was joy. And I felt his joy yesterday as I was driving home. So I'm driving down the main street and this guy was sitting in front of Cane's and I'm singing, arms flailing, teeth showing. And he's looking at me like, what's going on with this black lady? You know what I mean? But that's what he was. And while I was going through the lowest points of grief, one message came from three of my closest friends, you being one of them, was acceptance. And during my emotional roller coaster, you and Andrea gave me the message of acceptance because, you know, I guess when I think about God's sovereignty, I just have to accept. I can't control anything. I can't control anybody. I can't control how anyone reacts. I can't bring him back, you know? And so, but yesterday in my conversation, I had a meeting, a business meeting for my consulting firm with Melanie Clark. And when I talked to her about his joy, she said, when you think about everything that we do as coaches, she says, acceptance is the one thing that we're trying to get our clients to have. Like, you can't control this. Your frustration and all these things all stem from your lack of acceptance. And that's what he was. And so it was interesting that the three people very close to me all gave the same message. And I felt that yesterday I was able to sing on the ride home from the grocery store because I accepted that he's in a better place and God is sovereign in all of this, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So my temp check, strangely enough, is 350 degrees today.
Oh. Okay. I was gonna ask because the theme today is hope temperatures. Mm-hmm. So do you want to elaborate a little bit more on how is how is hope weaving into where you're at today?
So I have hope that acceptance helps me to be frustrated less, because I feel that with all the things that I do for work and all the things that I do for my family and productivity and all these things, a lot of it stems from a desire to control. And that control is the antithesis of acceptance. And so if I could get myself to a place of acceptance, not laziness, not, you know what I mean? Just acceptance. I think that with all the things that I do, there would be an undercurrent of peace.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm looking for. That's what I'm hoping for.
I heard this story about a wise man who everybody went to go see on some mount somewhere, likely in India. And, you know, he was so peaceful and everybody sought his wisdom. And it was the personal story of someone who had gone to see him, and they, you know, they went, they climbed the mountain to go see him, and they sat at his feet and they said, you know, what's your secret? And he said, I'm okay with what happens.
Acceptance.
Just open-ended. Whatever happens, he's okay with it. Anything. And that really struck me, because that's, you know, I've been thinking about that word you were using, limitless. Mm-hmm. That's limitless. There's no limits on when he would take back his will or his resistance. It's just a blanket statement. I'm okay with whatever happens.
Yeah.
So it could just be any outcome, and I'm reserving acceptance in advance of that. And that is so cool, because that is not where I'm at, but it's because there's so many different things that would happen that I would right away want to resist. Because I think I know how things should be. So if something happens that's not the way I want it to be, then that causes me to go into resistance. But I do remember reading in The Power of Now many years ago that resistance to what is the cause of most, or maybe all, suffering. Just resistance to what is. So if something happens, we don't like it, it's really hard to metabolize certain things. And I think death is definitely one of them, especially when it's unexpected and it's so painful. And I think there does have to be a process of like a reckoning where you give yourself time to come to acceptance. And I'm really happy that you did do that, because I know we took a break last week, and you know it was important to have time to grieve, and grief hits you like waves. It's so unpredictable when it will come, and then it just takes you to your knees, because it's so hard to accept this thing that is fixed. It is an outcome, and it's done, and it's over, and it happened. But our minds want to reverse engineer it so that it didn't. And that's how we're not in acceptance initially. You know, every person I've ever known that has died, it's like I think I can sort of go back in time and take a different action, and that would prevent their death.
Oh, gosh.
You know, there's this lack of acceptance of what is. And that's, you know, I think it takes time to get to a place where you can be in acceptance. But I'm happy that that message gave you hope, that you could find light. And what I love about, because when you sent me his picture, I was like, oh my God, this guy was buoyant. He was, I've showed his picture to many people and they were like, oh, like you can just tell by looking at him that he is just a jar full of delight.
He was.
To steal a line from Rumi. He is a jar full of delight. You can just tell by the way he holds himself, by his smile, by his body language. And what I have found helpful in the past when I get run over by a train like that is finding what their light was and trying to continue that.
Yes.
And that's what I'm hearing from you is you're saying, you know, you're seeing this purple pickup truck and you're finding that lightness and that buoyancy and that humor and that freedom, and you're letting that pass through you mm-hmm. in that moment and living in that and then expressing joy through singing. I didn't know you were going to take us to 1996. That's what threw me. That's why I didn't join in, because when you told me this morning that you had that song in your head, I was thinking we're going to do a throwback 60s song, because I wasn't right away picking up on which song it was. But then when you started singing that one, I was like, is it? Because I just wasn't ready to go to the mid-90s. That's not where I thought we were going. And then I don't know what my expectation of that was. But yeah, I'm happy to hear, because we have these, just that you can get those light moments, because then the grief comes again, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's just the fact that you're living moment to moment, I think, makes me feel hopeful, because you're traveling this road.
Yeah.
You know, and just moving forward. And when you're going through hell, keep going.
Old, unevolved Bettina would have jumped into action. I'm so, you know, in my superhero cape that has bullet holes in it. I would have jumped into action. I would have been planning the services, doing everything for my mother, doing everything for my family, making sure everybody was okay. And then probably 2 weeks after the services, I would have been a ball of jello on the floor by myself alone, weeping and really struggling to get myself together. I feel like the beauty is I live in another state, so all I could do was do minimal orchestration from my standpoint. And my daughter, Chaisa, my middle child, she was the California Bettina, honey. She stepped in. She took off work. She was there for her grandmother, Johnny on the spot for everything. She stayed at their house. She did everything that was necessary to make sure that my mom wasn't alone. She was my boots on the ground as I would have been back in the day. And that gave me the freedom to sit in those emotions. And I've never been able to do that because I'm so used to taking charge and being the go-to person when there's something going on. And so I got to, for the first time in my life, experience Psalm 30 and 5, which is weeping may endure for the night, but joy comes in the morning. Like, I went through these crying spells and all these different things, right? But I can honestly say, when I said I'm coming in hot today, I meant that. That was not an act. I'm not a fake person. I don't think I have a fake bone in my body anyway. But I mean it. Like, I'm really joyful today. And I do understand that grief comes in waves, and I am prepared to let it come and let it go. I'm not going to hold on to anything too tightly, because we've been talking about that for weeks on this show, right? And so I'm here for it all. But today is a good day. So I want to hear about your temp check. Like, what is your temp check today?
Yeah. Well, at first, I just want to say also that I'm really sorry for your loss.
Thank you.
When you were talking about finding hope within this really dark time, it actually reminded me of, I had this moment when I lost Uncle Bob and when I was in Costa Rica. And just because we're talking about different spiritual threads, as you would say. And I'm just reflecting on that. I forgot to tell you that when I was in Costa Rica after Uncle Bob passed away, and I was just in a torrent of grief and barely functioning, and I went for a walk in this sort of jungle area that was outside of the hotel. And it was really early in the morning, and there were these monkeys that were out there, and I wanted to go and find them. And I was with Herschel, and we were walking through the jungle, crack of dawn, pretty far off from the hotel. And we encountered this man in the woods, And mm-hmm. he was from the U.S. and he was just telling us, he's like, oh, I'm from Philadelphia. And I'm just thinking in my mind, I'm like, Uncle Bob's from Philadelphia. And he's like, then he said, by way of Minnesota. And I was thinking, Uncle Bob lived in Minnesota because our family is also from Minnesota. And he just kept saying these different things that were reminding me of Uncle Bob.
Mm-hmm.
And he was this really kind person, and he had brought some food out for the monkeys and some bananas, and he just had this really peaceful demeanor, which was also, you know, Uncle Bob was the poster boy of equanimity. He just, mm-hmm. nothing ruffled him. And I was just feeling a little more awake now. I was like a walking zombie that whole trip, but some type of spidey senses were like tingling, and I was like, it's weird that we're encountering this man in the middle of nowhere. And then he was just giving us all this kindness. And then I, at the end of our conversation, we were about to head back on the path. And I was like, it was really nice to meet you. I'm Jen. And he said, it was nice to meet you too. My name is Bob.
Oh my gosh. Wow. Wow, wow, wow.
And that, the reason why I was thinking about that moment is because it was like hope.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not exactly hope, but like this glimmer of light,
mm-hmm. that
there's something bigger.
Wow, wow, wow.
You know, and there's something like energetically happening here that mm-hmm. I got to touch. Mm-hmm. For 1 second. It was just, and there were more things. I'm going to have to pull up. I wrote and wrote and wrote that whole trip, but there were more similarities. It wasn't just the Philadelphia and the Minnesota thing. It was this vibe, but it was also, there was a bunch of other details that I've now forgotten about because
yeah,
it was, you know, 3-4 years ago. But I'll find it in my journal one of these days, how many just weird coincidences there were. But mm-hmm. when that happened, when he said Bob, I was just like,
yeah,
I lost it. I'm
sure.
It was so beautiful though, right? Because it's like sometimes when, you know, when things are cracked open, you're disarmed mm-hmm. in a way that you can experience something that you wouldn't have otherwise experienced. Because I think a lot of us just kind of go through the day checking things off the to-do list, and it's a form of armoring. Like, busyness is a form of armoring. And I know when I'm about to go into this day, because I start work a little bit later, but I already have a list of, you know, a dozen things that need to get checked off, and that's before I start making the dinner and doing the whatever and putting the kids to bed. So I'm living in this kind of state of being asleep, I'm afraid sometimes. And I want to be in a place of awareness. And mm-hmm. so sometimes when something like this happens, when death happens, everything stops.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so I wanted to share that moment with you because—
Oh, that's awesome.
I feel like you're touching something beautiful in this really dark moment. There's like this sliver of light where you're putting your finger on his spirit. Mm-hmm. And I know that when I was going through that loss, it helped me so much to try to think of how I could carry his spirit on. And so that's why I just love to hear you saying that you're just carrying his spirit on, because he did seem like such a beautiful soul.
He went through so much in his life, and just how he navigated life, though, the way it was like he left a footprint of joy everywhere he went. He was always that person like, I'll cook for you. I will serve you. I'll help you. Just willing. First of all, he was massive, like 6'5". He was huge, right?
Yeah, he's a big dude.
But his spirit was tiny. It was like you would think that he would have this big, like, oppressive, you know, like, imposing. And he was all heart and service. all heart and service.
Yeah.
And so I love that when we he lived with me when I lived in the Torrance house, my beach house. He lived with me for about, I don't know, 8 months, 6 months or something like that. And he was always like, you want me to make you breakfast? And I'm like, I don't even eat breakfast. No, thank you. But thanks. You know, I want to take a walk for breakfast. And but he was always offering himself. He was always offering to do something. How can I serve you? And that is, it's funny because I'm that way too. Like, I love when people come over because I want to serve you. I want to treat you. I want you to feel like when you leave here, you're like, oh, that was gave me the warm and fuzzies, you know?
Yeah.
And so we were very much alike, but he just had such a joyful spirit. And he shared that. He shared that with Wild Abandon. And that was, to me, the most beautiful thing about him, you know, his just yeah. his capacity to love. April 25th, we had was our last conversation, and we connected on that phone call. Though we talked every month, like a couple times a month, but that phone call, we were in tears. We were on the phone for like an hour and a half. He was telling me about some things that he went through in his senior year in high school. And we were crying on the phone. And I was like, I'm so sorry you went through that. And I feel like a bad big sister. Now, the thing is, he and my son, who my son's my oldest, they're 6 weeks apart. Actually, my son is 6 weeks older than him. So my mom and I were pregnant at the same time. And so I was busy with my own high schooler. You know, my own senior. And so I was apologizing. I was like, I'm so sorry for not being a good big sister. He was like, you were always there. You were always helping. Like, you did what you could. You had your own kids. Like, I get it. But he was giving me outs. And I'm like, I'm sorry. You know what I mean? And I just love you. But we connected on such a deep level on that phone call. And I got to see his heart in a way that I never have. Like, I got to see some of the pain that he had been carrying. And I just pray that the way I loved on him in that phone call, I pray that that was what he could hold on to. Just like I have so many things of him to hold on to now that he's not in this realm with me anymore. I pray that the love that I shared with him on that phone call, that he could mm-hmm. hold on to that as he was transitioning out of here, you know?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
so, yeah. That was our last contact. And I told everybody about that phone call because, first of all, you never know that the last time is going to be the last time. You never know that, right? But on top of that, though, I kept telling everybody, I'm like, I connected with BJ in such a crazy way. And I kept telling everybody, And then this is how I'm remembering him from that April 25th conversation. Right? Isn't that crazy? So he's like my brother son, you know? And we spoiled him. My daughter was asking me, she was like, what's your best memory of him? I said, I have two. And I said, one is April 25th, but the one from the old one, and it's all of my siblings share the same memory. He was a big baby because he was like a Samoan baby, right? He was a big baby. And we all had to rock him to put him to sleep. And so we had this big dining room table that sat, it was like an oak wood dining room table that sat eight people. And so we would make laps around that dining room table, walking him until he went to sleep, and then we could put him in his bed. And that's one of my favorite memories of him, that and the April 25th conversation. So it's almost like birth, like the beginning of his life and the end of his life are my two favorite memories of him.
Mm.
It's crazy, huh?
Yeah.
So yeah, this is insane, but what I feel is more connected than ever to him because of the way we connected. And I know that that's nothing but God's grace on my life because mm-hmm. he's perfect and he's all knowing. And he knew that I was going to need that. Like I would have been in a shattered place had April 25th mm-hmm. not happened.
Yeah. There's something really comforting about knowing that you've loved someone with everything you have.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that it helps. You know, there's just these certain things that help. It helps to talk about them. It helps to share memories about them. And it helps to try to carry their spirit on and to try to embody what they were about. Mm-hmm. And it helps to remember that you spent your time loving them. And I think it's especially hard, just what you were saying about how he had a service heart and a really joyful way of being. And not that many people are like that.
I know.
That's losing Uncle Bob too.
So many better stages of life, and they can't find joy. You know, they cannot find joy, and he had it like flowing through his veins
in spades.
Yeah, I listen to his voicemail still. I'll call his phone number, and there's a point he was like, "This is Billy. You've reached Billy. Sorry I wasn't able to take your call, but leave a message and I'll get back to you as soon as I can. Have a wonderful day." And I'm like, well, dang, boy. You know?
You guys were cut from the same cloth.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
He's more like me than any of my siblings. And it's funny because I'm the beginning and he's the end. I'm the oldest. He's the youngest.
Yeah. My hope temp, I'm just going to keep it very, very short. I am always hopeful. I am hopeful. And I was thinking about this class that I took in, what's the actual temp? I'll say 65.
Okay.
You know, it's breezy. It's not my warm, comforting temp, but it's optimistic.
I love that.
You know how it's that weather where it's spring? You know, is it summer? Is it spring? But it's just a crisp day. And then you're just thinking, it's coming. It's coming. You know, this isn't the day for the tank top necessarily, but it's coming. And I'm hopeful. And I was just thinking about this class I took in college. It was called Truth and History. And it was about the subjectivity of history and how it's told. And is there such a thing as objective truth? And this one girl, this genius girl, she said one form of truth is, you know, what if there's something that it's not objectively true, but I have to believe in it? So I think the example that she gave is, what if it was objectively proven that men's brains are smarter than women's? What if that was true? She was like, I think this is the example she gave. And she said, just wouldn't work for me to not believe that my brain is just as smart, and it would serve me in every way to continue to believe that my brain was just as smart. So I have to believe that I am as intelligent, because that's what's going to move me forward.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like that to some extent with spirituality and with not religion, but with a higher power belief, is I believe because I have to believe. Mm-hmm. And that's how it is with, because it improves my life and because it takes me out of the driver's seat. And it doesn't matter whether it's objectively true, but it's the same thing with this hope temperature, is I need to have hope because having hope keeps me alive.
Absolutely.
I need to look at things in a positive way. So I'm making a choice to look at things in a positive way because that's what's keeping me afloat.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, it is a form of faith, but it's just always looking forward to a brighter day, but not just a brighter day, but also just if something were to go horribly wrong, like a death or a something, it's just a fundamental belief that I am going to be okay.
Yes.
And even if I'm not okay, that's also okay. It's okay to not be okay. It really, really, really is. I don't have to be okay all the time. I can move through a place of not being okay and then be okay with not being okay, you know? So that's where I'm at. I think I really do have an indomitable hope, and that is not how I've always been. That is a choice that I'm making now in this time of my life. So that's my hope temperature. Spring, sunny.
You said spring, sunny?
Yeah.
I love it.
You have to.
I love it. I want to add to that, because I know what it looks like when people don't have that, when people don't have hope. And I feel that I lean into spirituality because I understand that as life happens, you have to believe in something bigger than you. in order to have somewhere to put all of the things and all of the emotions that you're going to go through as life is happening to you. And I know what it looks like when a person doesn't have that. I've seen people that are completely devoid of faith in anything ever getting better. And these are the people that are absolutely miserable, that develop sickness and disease because they're holding on to all these feelings instead of releasing them to somewhere. You know, I have the ability to, I'm like, okay, God, you got to do something with this because I got to let this go. You know, I can't hold on to that because it's been proven that if you don't release some grief and some sadness and some things, they can manifest in your body as diseases, you know, and illnesses. And that is not okay. And so I've seen people that have extraordinary circumstances in their life. And because they don't have an ounce of faith, it's, well, this just is how it is. And because they don't have anywhere to put said emotions, said feelings, said thoughts, and because they don't have hope in anything being better, then life is just this bleak and sad and depressing thing that they're enduring versus living, you know? And even in grief,
I do know, because I spent most of my life in that place.
Yeah, even in grief, even in sadness, I want to live. And so I'm grateful to be able to wrap my arms around weeping may endure for a night, but joy comes in the morning. Because that's literally the 7 days, the first 7 days, I went through every piece of sad and downtrodden emotion you can experience with this, you know? But today and yesterday, I'm not saying this is just what it's going to be going forward, but I'm experiencing absolute joy. And it's joy not because I have, you know, $1 million in the bank or anything like that. It's joy because I'm joyful.
The little things. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You were able to open to that joy because you let the train run over you.
I allowed it.
You surrendered to what was happening in each moment. And then that's what allowed the clouds to open up to give you the moment of joy. And then you fully inhabited that moment.
As well as the other ones.
Yeah. And just to build off what you're saying, someone was asking me the other day, how do you start to develop spirituality if you are a non-believer? And I think I'm the perfect person to ask that question to, because I was not raised with any religion. And also I was raised with like a really steely intellectualism, which prevented me from seeing religious people as anything but sort of foolish, almost in a way. Happier, I can admit that they looked happier, but also because of my dad and my brother are both very hardcore science people. My dad has a PhD in physics, and they're just really rational, logical people. And then there's no other form of religion or spirituality in my family at all. So I can really identify with that.
Mm-hmm.
And she was saying, it seems like it basically just starts with willingness and openness. And I said, you're dead on. That's exactly what it is. She intuited it perfectly. It just starts with willingness. And there's this line that says, God doesn't make too hard terms with those who seek him. And it made sense to me that to position myself as a seeker. So even if I don't necessarily want to name the thing that I'm looking for God, I can still position myself as a seeker and just to have a willingness to believe. And so then when something happens like that, where I am waiting, you know, I'm not believing yet, maybe necessarily, but then when I'm meeting this man named Bob, who's from Philadelphia and Minnesota, and I'm in Costa Rica in the middle of the jungle, and we're in, you know, we're in Central America. That just seems like a crazy coincidence.
It's so no such thing as coincidence. I just love that you experienced that.
Yeah, and even though I'm not necessarily willing to say there's no such thing as coincidence, I'm willing to lean into that this is a lot of coalescing of coincidental factors. This is a lot. So And then the thing is, I want to believe that this is something bigger. I want to believe that Bob or Bob's energy or something. And I want to believe that. So that, because that gives me comfort. And then this person was saying, well, you know, religion or spirituality is just a way for people to get comfort when bad things happen. And I said, what's wrong with that? You know, if there's this suspension of disbelief, for me, if I can have this suspension of disbelief even for one moment to give myself comfort, good. I need comfort. I want comfort. I want to take care of myself. And I maybe I can give up a little bit of my, you know, self-righteousness and thinking I know everything, and maybe lean into a little bit of comfort instead. And then I don't know if I've told you this before, but I heard this speaker who said her first sponsor, who was this very harsh, acerbic personality, the sponsee said, God is for stupid people who don't know what's going on. And then the sponsor said, good, then it'll be perfect for you. And that's how I relate to that is, yeah, I don't know what's going on in many ways. I don't need to cling to the idea that I know what's going on. I'd actually rather choose to believe I don't know. And isn't that what they always say? Is like the more you know what you don't know, or just the older you get, the more you realize you don't know. Like everything I've ever collected in my little pursuits of wisdom has always been like, admit you don't know, admit you don't know, admit you don't know. You know? Mm-hmm. I don't need to flex this intellectualism to what? To protect myself, to keep telling myself, well, I'm smarter, I'm better. That's my own defense mechanism. And I don't want that as part of my life anymore.
Yeah, so. I think that I don't think it has to be an either or. I feel like a few of the things that have helped me is understanding a lot of people go into science or religion. You know what I mean? I am a believer that science proves religion, you know? So
there's no dichotomy necessarily.
It doesn't have to be an either or. How come? I say in every term that I'm a both and girl. You know, it doesn't have to be an either or thing. And so I generally go after authors that bridge the gap, you know, and help me understand how what I believe is scientifically proven. And so it's so interesting when people are so staunch on one side or the other. It's always
one
interesting
or
to
the
me.
Other.
It's always interesting
yeah,
to me.
Yeah, that's very Western too, because in Eastern and Asian cultures, that yin yang thing is the, you know, is representative of each thing containing a piece of the other thing. Whereas in the Western world, we're so obsessed with this or that. But that's why I feel really drawn to integrative medicine. Because speaking of not having hope, I used to be really depressed and really anxious and really lost. And I would always be going to these psychiatrists, basically. So we're talking about now science, right? Or my dad wouldn't consider it science. My dad thinks I think all of psychology and psychology is like a soft science, and he doesn't really respect it as a physicist. But it's science. It is science medicine. And I would go to these doctors, and I would just show up in this state of desperation, and they, you know, those psychiatrists only give you a very short period of time. It's not talk therapy. It's like you have this increment, this 30-minute increment or whatever, and it costs like $500 or whatever. It's a very interesting way to address illnesses. And I would present with whatever symptoms, depressed, not motivated, anxious, can't sleep, and then they would prescribe me medication. But because that was their only tool is medication. And what I wish someone had asked me is, how is your diet?
Yeah.
How is your community? Do you have a community? Do you have a support network? How are you sleeping? Are you opening up to the people around you? Are you asking for help? Are you allowing help to come into your life? Remember one time you said to me, I have some receiving work to do. I wasn't able to receive. I was just not feeling like I was worthy of getting the help. And so being that they had this one tool that they could use, that's the tool I walked away with. Antidepressants, anti-anxiety medications.
But yes,
as a whole person, I was suffering from a spiritual malady. And yeah, the spiritual malady was the direct result of me being out of balance in a multitude of ways, you know? And so this idea of I don't really know. This is another one of those things where I feel that we should call upon someone to teach us about mind-body centering or something, you know? There's some type of wholeness that needs to be talked about by someone who actually knows what they're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, I wasn't a whole spiritual being because I wasn't moving my body and I didn't have a support network. And that was just as much, if not a bigger part of why I was suffering than my brain chemistry. So
yeah,
I don't know why I'm randomly talking about integrative medicine, but maybe one day we'll have someone come teach us about it.
So let's go into the life focus question for today, which is supporting each other's evolving visions. I want to kick this one off. For me, my evolving vision, I'm always so, you know, I feel for you as my friend because my vision is ever evolving. But being in this place with, you know, being surrounded by family, you know, during this time, you know, we're celebrating BJ's life. And there was something that I was looking at one day, a couple days ago. The family was all together. My mom had all the grandkids over, as many as could be, you know, contacted at the moment, but there were so many people in the house, but it was mostly family. It was just, you know, my siblings, my mom, my stepdad, my stepbrother, his family. My daughter took a picture of my stepdad walking down the street with the dog and my youngest nephew, and a couple of the grandkids. And it was the sweetest, sweetest moment. And I was looking at everything at my mom's life and how blessed she is to have this much love around her, this much family, like this many grandkids. And you know what I mean? Like all of this. And I was like, that's what I want for my life. I want to be surrounded by love. I want to be intentional about creating memories with the people that I love. I want to have the hustle and bustle of kids around. I'm not really into animals. I know a lot of people are. Not really my thing. But people that I love, you know, around me. And if they bring their animals, so be it, you know. But that's my evolving vision. My evolving vision is, you know, creating this life where I'm comfortable when I come to California and my people are comfortable when they, you know, visit me in my state. And, you know, just having the ability to create this space where the people that you love are welcome and it's comfortable and we're creating memories. And I feel like if I got nothing else out of this experience with my brother transitioning from here, I don't say we lost him because he's not lost, but with him transitioning from this realm is really a vision of what I want my family to look like and how I want to participate and engage in a connection with the people that I really care about the most.
I'm with you and I'm seeing your vision.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard one time that the recipe for happiness or contentment or something along those lines was to have something to love, something to do, and something to look forward to. So I'm just going to throw that out there as a framework. So I'm hearing a lot of something to love. Something to love can be someone to love and it can be something to love. But you just described a picture where it's just full of love. It's full of people that you love.
Mm-hmm.
So can you also fill that in with for the future? Because you are so much more future oriented than me. Like I said, when I look into the future, in the past, I've just seen a blank. So you are extremely future oriented. So can you tell us about those two other categories? Something to do, meaning how are you filling your time? What are you doing? What's your sense of purpose? And then what are you looking forward to?
I could easily fill that in. So for me, something to do is, you know, now in hindsight, I've been, you know, the whole moving across country, you know, it all makes sense now because, you know, not that I want to be away from my family, but I want to create, you know, we've been talking about the changes that you've been making in your home and how you've been creating like an oasis of sorts at home so that you vacation at home versus always needing to get away. And that has been a dream for me. So what I'm thinking of, I was thinking as an empty nester before, like, oh, all I need is a small place. I just, as long as I have the master bedroom, a gym room, and maybe a guest room, I'm fine. But now that vision has expanded to, and you know me, I've always thought, you know, about family legacy and things like that. But I think it's come from this big, you know, dream, like, oh, having a compound and things like that. And what I'd really like to have is a place where, like, if my mom and my stepdad wanted to get away from California for 3 months and just experience a winter in the Midwest, I would love to be able to host them. And what would it look like to have a home that is comfortable for people to stay in for 3 months at a time, you know? Or what would it look like if, you know, I wanted to come to California and stay for a month, what would I need to be able to work? You know, do I have to always travel with my pillow? You know, can I, you know, have my favorite pillow in California somewhere that's a space that's designated just for me? So when you say what's, you know, what's to do, it's now come to, okay, what kind of home would I have if I needed to host, I don't know, five people, but I don't want it to be some massive, you know, unattainable, something like that. Like, what's cozy enough? You know what I mean? Where I could see my mom working outside in the garden, or, you know, my daughter here saying, Mom, you know, I'm going to be traveling to do some work in Indiana, and I'd like to stay with you. Sure. You know, what would that look like? And the vision now is not necessarily a compound, but guest quarters, you know, which is so much easier to attain, you know, just having guest quarters where we can, you know, eat meals together and enjoy nature together and, you know, take walks together and just do things. So something to do is finding a perfect spot that would, you know, really allow me to host in the way that I want, where it's intimate, yet comfortable, and, you know, just not the big dream of a major compound where my brother has a house over here and that brother has a house over there. Nah, I want a house that's a decent size where, you know, the family can be comfortable and we can share meals and create memories in one space. Mm. But, and if we're a little bit on top of each other, that's okay. But I want it to be comfortable yet intimate. And that's a different vision. And it's something that I can attain a lot quicker than a compound. And then what was the other question? Like,
I feel like that one's kind of something to look forward to is mm-hmm. having a space. What I'm hearing is it's a space that's not necessarily as expansive as your original vision that you described to me, in the sense that mm-hmm. it's the compound with the different houses or the different lots of land, but that it's a place where the setup is accommodating and where the mm-hmm. environment fosters togetherness. Mm-hmm. And that's really cool. I love that. So the other one yeah. is something to do, but in the sense of how do you pass your time? When you look forward, everybody needs to have a sense of purpose. So something to do. It could be your job. It could be your hobby. But what are you doing on the daily to pass your time in the future?
Well, two things, actually. I, you know, being in this space of you know, this togetherness on the heels of grief, I want to be more integrated with my family. But on the other side of it is I want to be more intentional with my work. In this day of togetherness, I was talking to my brother's wife, and she was saying that when they moved to Arizona, that they moved from Michigan to Arizona. And I'm like, gosh, how is the heat in Arizona? Like, do you love it there? She said, I don't love it, but I don't hate it as much as I hated the cold in Michigan. Mm. And so she said that she gave them a one-year goal. She said, either we're going to buy a home in 1 year so we can start our family, or we're going to have to move back to Michigan. And that was enough of, you know, that was enough putting the fire, her feet to the fire for her to actually achieve that goal of purchasing that property in that year.
That's not a small accomplishment in this market.
No small feat. And so, and they did it. And I'm taking that from her. Like, if I'm this serious about this thing that I want to create, I'm not going to just have this lackadaisical time frame. I'm going to give myself a year to really be able to put my roots down here, well, in Indiana, and because I'm recording from California today, but I want to be able to put my roots down in a way that is walking me toward that vision, that more attainable, easier to attain vision of the accommodating thing. And for me, it's just a matter of, okay, if this is where I want to be in a year, what needs to happen in month one, month two, month three, month four, so that I'm realizing what I want in month 12. Make sense?
Mm-hmm. You're big on that. Reverse engineering into smaller steps. Yeah.
Absolutely. So that's my vision for it. And so it's like, okay, researching what that kind of property looks like. Okay, what is the cost of that? Okay, how do we get to the down payment of that? You know, that kind of thing. So that's exactly where I'm at. Mm-hmm. That's the framework for how this actually happens. And I already know I'm going to need your support, because I need to be, you know, as we do these check-ins, I want to be reminded, like, hey, where are you on this? Like that time when you checked me real good and you were like, yeah, you're doing so good with that, but what about this over here? You know, I want that with this dream.
All right. Give me your Q3 breakdown and I'll hold your feet to the flame.
Exactly. Exactly. So looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to that. And it is an evolving vision, but on the heels of something, you know, that would seem like a tragedy, I just see this beautiful garden of love and togetherness forming. And you can never be mad at that.
Yeah. I'm really hearing a turn in the way that you're talking about your family. And it's so beautiful that the silver lining of this tragedy has been that you've drawn so much closer to your family of origin. Because you don't typically talk in this like extremely rosy, warm way about your past or your, you know, current relationships. And I think something that you've been saying to me in the past is you wish you did have that. And so it sounds like you're drawing closer to that goal as well, to making that a reality, and that this situation has kind of thrown you all together, but in a way that's been so healing for all of you.
Yeah, absolutely. Because we have, you know, not had a lot of tragedy around us. And so to be here, you know, I guess our deaths in the past around our family, we understood them, if that makes sense. And there have only been a few, but we understood them. This, it was harder to understand. Yeah. And so it just made us look at You know, what have we been focusing on, you know, as a unit? What have we been focusing on? And if it's not, whatever it is that we've been focusing on, if it's not fostering unity and community, then what is the point? Yeah. What's the point?
Right.
You know,
it's causing us to drift apart. We're not going in the right direction.
And how I feel like this is the ultimate honoring way you can honor someone. I feel like if BJ's passing was to bring us together and we do that successfully, it's not in vain.
Uncle Bob used to say, his kind of mantra was, everything always works out.
Yeah.
And then he would say, and even when it doesn't work out, it works out.
That's true. That's so true. And I love that.
Right? Because it's not an outcome anybody would have wanted, but in a different way that no one expected, it worked out.
Yep. Yep.
You know, and that's, I think that's, there's so much truth to that.
Yep. How about you, though? What's your evolving vision for your life?
My future vision, this is the first time in my life I'm ever really looking to the future, because I've basically spent my entire life running away from relationships and situations and people and jobs and commitments. And this time, you know, is the first time in my life that I've been coming home to myself and coming home to the people that are in my life, and sort of I've been consolidating. Like I said, I've been really consolidating my relationships in the sense that my family, moving my family, my new family, the brand new, I've got a kid under 1 year still, to the center. And part of that centralizing has to do with home, just like you. So I've never, like I said, I've been a nomad for most of my life. So this is the first time I've ever had a home that I feel at home in. And I was talking to my brother because he was here this weekend. And I was talking about how my one friend, I have this one friend who every time I go that I grew up with, it's my male best friend again. Every time I go to his parents' house, I love his parents. I'm obsessed with his parents. And I remember from the youngest age, they had four kids. Their house was complete chaos, but it was that joyful type of chaos where they had the best drinks. They had a whole fridge. They had one of those garage fridges. I'm all about the snacks. You know me. So it was like they had the best snacks, the best drinks, and all the things I wasn't allowed to have. And then their house was just so boisterous. But even so, the mom always made me feel special. And I was just, who am I? No one really, because I'm just the sister of, you know, my brother was his best friend growing up. So I'm the sister who's, I don't even know really why I was there. But
yeah,
she would always just take that one moment to shine her light on me and to say, what are you interested in or what's going on with you? And it, those moments were really brief because, like I said, she had four kids and she was a teacher and she was cooking dinner and her life was chaos. But I felt loved in those little moments. And so we went last summer to his brother's child's birthday party. So it was a child's birthday party at their house. And when we were leaving, I felt this pain because I felt like, I want to stay here. And this is so weird, and I can't believe I'm saying it. But I know, but I was telling my brother, I was like, I still, even as an adult, feel this like tearing sensation because I wish I lived here and this was my family.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that that seems weird as someone who's a fully grown adult to feel this longing still to be part of it was because they were a bigger family. You know, me growing up, it felt very lonely. Both my brother and I felt really lonely growing up. And I still feel this little bit of hurt sometimes because I wish that my home, like they've got the pool and they're always grilling. And just every time I have to leave, I wish I didn't have to leave.
Oh,
I wish that I was part of that family. And I have that with a few families. There's actually my two female best friends also have these parents that you just want to be friends with them. Like, whenever I get on the phone with my male friend's dad, him and I, we will never get off the phone. For whatever reason, him and I just have this crazy connection, and we'll just talk forever until one of us has to go do something else. So he's in, you know, he has worked in like the literary field, I guess, forever. So he's a writer, and we just have a lot of commonality, and we can just talk all day. So every time I see him, we have this, just like at that little kid's birthday party, you know, it's little kids, but we're having this really deep conversation on the lawn. And it's just, I have such great times whenever I'm there, and it always ends too soon. So I was talking to my brother about, like, how do I address this thing in me that is still broken after all these years. I still have this longing for this family and this home, this sense of home and this sense of belonging that I just never got. And basically, he thought I was oversimplifying this, because this is how my brother is. He's like this really brilliant person who is always thinking about things with a lot of complexity. But the easiest way that I can understand how to change the way I'm feeling is always to take an action. So the action that I think I need to take is that I just need to create that for my kids. And yep. I know that's really simple, and that's kind of every parent's goal ultimately. But I want to be really intentional about growing where I'm planted and fostering a sense of belonging for my, and making a home for my family. And now that I've realized that, you know, if you had talked to me 6 years ago, I would have told you I'm pursuing being a digital nomad. But now I realize, I know this about myself, that I actually really thrive within a routine. And also, I think I had mentioned to you traveling. We tried to go away last weekend. It's like, if the bed is some type of way, my whole body is thrown off and my whole day is thrown off. If the bed is too soft, I die. I can't sleep. I'm already a horrible sleeper. So it's just, traveling has become less appealing to me. I have traveled quite a bit, and there are definitely a few countries I'm still interested in going to, Japan being one of them, and India for sure. But it's not for now, because I've got these little kids, and just even going away, we made it one night out of the two nights we were supposed to be there, and the amount of stuff we had to pack for a 10-month-old and a 3-year-old was absurd. The whole trunk was packed. It's like, they need so much stuff. So, and then it's stressful, because it's like, just not your home environment where you know you can leave them unsupervised, because everything's safe and they're not going to be pulling some glass thing down off the shelf, you know? So my future vision right now, I'll just break it down in that same way. Something to look forward to is that every year I put my tax return into my backyard, and this year we're going crazy on the yard. I was on maternity leave last year. I got a really nice tax return because I made very little money last year. Mm-hmm. And I got this great tax return, and I always throw it right into my yard. So we just got a fence, and we're, you know, I was talking to my sister-in-law, also was here on Sunday, and she was just talking about how she feels so overwhelmed because they have this new house that they moved into. And the amount of stuff you need for a house, between the furniture and the artwork and the paint and the yard stuff, it's insane. And she's got a really great job, and she wants to do it, but she's stressed for time and she's got two kids. And I just was saying, listen, I've been in this house now for 5 years. I bought this house in 2020, and it's still not done. Some rooms have been completely blank for the first 2 years, 3 years. Mm-hmm. You know, the yard is still a blank patch of grass. But this summer, we're finally doing the backyard makeover, and I'm making it into my oasis. And that's what she was saying she wants too. And I was just saying, please don't feel pressured to do this on a timeline. I'm making my backyard oasis this year, but it's been 5 years in the making, and I've been thinking about it and saving for it. And now I'm going to grow where I'm planted. And it's been a real problem for me in the past, always thinking that there's some other life that I would like better, and trying, my sponsor says I always think there's some parallel life to mine that I can jump into that would be better. And that's true. And I, in order to combat that, I need to really be so intentional about not always thinking about getting what I want, but wanting what I get. And this is what I got, where I am today, and this family and this life and this friends and this house. Like, our house is not huge. we live in a neighborhood with a lot of really tiny houses, but our yard is actually one of the bigger yards in our neighborhood with the tiny houses. So I can be grateful for that. Mm-hmm. We put up a fence around it so we could make it really private. I want to start thinking, not this year, but maybe next year, about some plants that we can put so it can just be really zen and green and beautiful. And so that is the thing I'm looking forward to. For the future, I want to be a lifelong learner like how you are. And so I'm really looking forward to just being creative and kind of in those moments where I don't have the kids, resting and creating and just filling my cup. You know, I think it's really important, especially as a parent, that I have me time. Like, I just went to the thrift store last weekend and I bought these hand weights, which are like soft foam, and they're probably like a pound or 2 pounds. And I was like, I want to spend, when I get up, I want to spend 10 or 15 minutes just moving my body with these weights in my hand, just free movement. And that's something I want to do. And
yeah,
I just want to be like, you know, Uncle Bob's lesson, just finding things that are joyful in each day and being present.
Yeah.
And then the people that are in my life that I love, I just want to be able to love on them and devote time to them and have those, you know, just to always be so grateful for the times that we get to spend together, because this, you know, as we've learned from this episode, that could be the last time. It's like really morbid, but it's true that this moment will only happen once. So you have to enjoy every moment.
Do you see the parallels yet again?
Yeah, that's my takeaway from this episode and talking about this is, don't miss it.
Yeah.
You know, and be intentional about being grateful about what you have, because you could lose it. Like, I heard, actually, Herschel sent me this thing where it said, what if you woke up today with only the things you thanked God for yesterday?
All I would have is my family.
That's a, you know, not nothing. But exactly. Did I even be grateful for having a roof over my head?
Yeah.
There's things we don't like about this house, but I need to change my attitude and just to have gratitude. I have a roof over my head. We have working heat and air conditioning. I have food in my fridge. I'm going to make your mango pico tonight. What? That's an amazing thing.
I love it.
Yeah, I've got jalapenos and mangoes up in here. So it's like, I'm looking forward to that. It's the little things, you know?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's me.
If I could cap this off with anything, there was an older lady growing up that went to my church. We called her Mother Hall. And, you know, we were the teenage, at this time that I'm referring to, we were like the teenage kids, right? Like, so 12, 13, 14, something like that. And I was convinced, all the kids were sitting around having a conversation, and I was absolutely convinced that I was Mother Hall's favorite. Right. And so someone said, I'll just get it from Mother Hall because I'm her favorite. I was like, boy, please. I am her favorite. What do you mean? And then someone else said, no, honey, I don't know what you think. I'm her favorite. And so she had every teenager at this church convinced that they were her favorite one. And what it was her incredible capacity to love. And so if I thought about who I wanted to be in this process, I would want to, and that's a whole superpower, right? But yeah, I would want to love like that, where everyone thinks that they're the closest to me,
yes,
because I have an incredible way of loving on them individually and collectively. You know, so if in my evolving vision, when we've looked at, you know, what I want, you know, how I want to get it and what I have to do to make it happen, this, I think what's also important is who I have to be in the process.
Yeah.
And that's who I want to be.
I want to jump right into our recipes. And our recipe for today is Next Chapter Nourishment forward-looking comfort food. You want to hit me with something like that?
Mine is going to be a smoothie.
Oh, I love that. I love that.
When I lived in Pasadena, it was the first time that I lived somewhere where, well, for temporarily, no one lived with me. So it was, I called it my bachelorette pad. It had everything that I needed. It was still two bedrooms. I had my gym room, but I blended smoothies a lot there. And so I would just get my favorite fruits and vegetables, blend them together. So one of my regular go-tos was avocado, strawberries, like just a bunch of fruit, just grapes, whatever I had, pineapples. But I would also do spinach. Spinach was an everyday part of, but I would just do a lot of fruit and some spinach in my NutriBullet. And I would blend up a day's worth of three smoothies. And I would snack in between I would have these tiny little meals in between. And so I was happy. I was energetic and I was active. Like I walked around the Rose Bowl. I ate these tiny meals and I drank these three smoothies. And that's what would be my nourishment recipe. My just get some, add a little water, all the fruit that you can put your favorite fruits and some spinach and put it in a blender and blend to get it to your desired consistency, because consistency is a thing, like texture is a thing for me. But I did that for months, and it was amazing, and my body was definitely responding.
How do you get the smoothies to last several days? Mine's separate.
No. A day's worth. So I would blend enough for it. Three smoothies throughout the day.
Okay. But still, yeah. How do you get them not to separate?
I just pull it out the refrigerator and shake it up and sip on, honey. Okay. Just shake it up and keep on going. But it was just the day. And the worst, the longest I could make it last, like if one lasted till morning, I could still, even if it was separated, I would put it on the bullet again and just let it blend a little bit more for like 30, 40 seconds and then keep on going.
So avocados and spinach and fruit?
Yes. And water.
Frozen or fresh?
So I would do both, honestly, because I would go to Costco and I would always get bags of fruit, but I preferred fresh. So if I had fresh on hand, that would be my preference. Or I would do a mix. If I wanted mango and my only mango was frozen, I would pull out some frozen mangoes out of the freezer. So it's dealer's choice on that.
Yeah.
But always spinach and avocado. If I did not have avocado, it was okay. But spinach was I liked mine green for some reason. It just made me feel like I was doing myself and the world a great service.
Yeah. I love that.
How about you?
So the thing that I've been into past couple weeks is actually, I don't know whether I want to call it a comfort food necessarily. I think I do, though, because wouldn't you say that a pickle is kind of a comfort food?
Every time I was pregnant, I ate pickles, and I still will pick up some pickles and just
eat them. It's comforting, right? Even when it's just an addition to a sandwich, it's something that's just adding that extra element of just happiness
into the
palate. So my friend Meryl, who I'm going to give the shout out to, she has a really incredible lifestyle, and part of her lifestyle is how much she loves food. And this is part of how she and I bond too, is it's just like, what's for dinner? But also how can we get really excited about what's for dinner? And she eats and lives her life in an incredibly artful and intentional way.
She sent
me these two pictures that just got my head going. So the first one she sent was pickled red onions. So the thing that I'm going to talk about is pickled red onions. That's what I'm getting into this.
Oh my gosh.
Pickled red onions. Every time I encounter them, I'm obsessed with them. I love them. It seems like they're a great addition to everything. Mexican food, sandwiches, anything.
Yes.
But I never make them. Why? Why haven't I been making these all along?
I have to start pickling as well.
Yeah. So she, it's one of those things where you say like, oh, I'm going to start pickling. And then like, I'm never doing that, you know?
But I will.
I was inspired because she sent me two pictures. The first picture was a picture of a salad, and it was, she said she steamed her own beets and then she put these pickled red onions. So it was a salad with pickled red onions and beets. And I thought, wow, I love that. It seems so healthy. It seems so rich. I love beets. It just, it makes you feel good to eat beets.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't recommend steaming them yourself. I did it. It's a nightmare. Don't do it. I don't know how she did it, if I just did something weird. But it took me forever. They still weren't soft. I got them stains everywhere. It was a pain to peel them. It was just a nightmare. But I'll just be buying the regular beets. I'm not that intrepid. But so I did the pickled red onion. So for the pickled red onions, you basically just slice up an onion. It's better if you have a mandolin. That makes it really, really easy.
Mm-hmm.
But the pickling couldn't be easier. You basically just do equal parts water and white vinegar.
Yeah.
So for this particular recipe, let's see, I did one big onion and then I did 2 cups white vinegar, 2 cups water, 1/3 cup cane sugar, 2 tablespoons sea salt. So those are some pretty great things. Water, white vinegar, sugar, and salt.
Mm-hmm.
You can't go wrong with that. Yes, you could add garlic cloves if you wanted to get a little fancy. Yes, you could add peppercorns. I didn't. I just wanted the pickled red onions. So I pickled the red onions. The salad that I made is I had to use what was in the fridge. So I had spinach and I also had romaine. So I did a mix of spinach and romaine. I did, for the first salad, I did the beets, the pickled red onions, the lettuce mix, and then I added feta. I had this herbed feta that was in the fridge and that was pretty good. And then the second night I made it, I just did the pickled red onions, the beets, and I had asparagus. And that was really good. I would do goat cheese if I had that on hand, but I didn't have that on hand. And I'm trying to get away from running to the grocery store for one thing because I'm famous for that.
Yeah.
I'm like, I need this goat cheese. You know, no, you don't. Just make it without it. So I made that. And then the other picture that she sent me, just because of, I just have to highlight her artful living because it like changed my pace where I'm like, now I need that thing, is she had for her two sons, she sent me this picture. It was 2 bagels, open face, and it had, she had made avocado toast out of
with
pickled red onions.
Yep.
And everything but the bagel seasoning.
Yep. Say less.
So I was just zooming in on that and I was like, what's that poppy seed doing there? And she's like, it's everything but the bagel seasoning. So open face bagel, avocado toast, pickled red onions, and everything but the bagel seasoning.
Yep.
So I've got this vat of pickled red onions in there right now and I'm just kind of adding that to everything and it's making me feel really good, but also it has that quality of the pickle that it's cold, it's vinegary, it's crunchy. And so for me, that is a comfortable place because I'm a big cold sandwich person. And so it's really kind of hitting the spot for me.
Okay. And I have one question. How long does it take to pickle the onions?
I think it's just really, you just have to leave it an hour. So you'll know when the onions turn red, like they turn this pinkish color. You can leave it. I mean, you can obviously leave it forever because they'll stay up in the fridge for up to 2 weeks. But it just was an hour. I made them and then I ate them for dinner that very same night.
Oh, great.
Yeah. Yeah. Just as soon as the onions turn red. The white part of the onion turns pink, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that was my thing, and I'm still finding different ways to add them in, but it's been making me do more salads. I've been doing a lot of pasta and a lot of heavier things, but now that I have those pickled onions, I've been just going lighter because they're just adding that lightness and that crunch and that acidity to everything.
And it's interesting. This is the time of year that I eat lighter, though, too, so I get
exactly.
that.
Exactly, so I'm moving into that summer mode now, so... They're really, and then when also just one last note, when I was in Ireland, my uncle Dick, he would always have a huge jar of pickled cucumbers. So it would just be the same exact idea, but he would just slice cucumbers really thin and he would put that into a jar with water and vinegar and salt and sugar. And then he would just eat those on the side of everything. So just envision you're eating pretzels and as a snack, but then you have these pickled cucumbers on the side.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Really good. Really good. So that was also inspiring. So I need to actually get a couple of mason jars because mason jars are annoying and you have to buy them a million of them. And I don't have the storage for, I need like two. So I actually think I'm going to just ask my life partner, neighbor, Sarah, if she can just give me two neighborly mason jars. And then I'm going to make a big vat of cucumbers and of red onions. And then I'm just going to have them on tap.
I love that. Well, I want to say thank you to all of those that lasted this long with us on our What's the Temp podcast. I do want to give a closing thought. This has been a heavy lift episode, so I thank you all for joining us and for loving us and just being so supportive of us. And the one thing that's standing out for me is Romans 8:28, and this just speaks to God's sovereignty, and we know that all things work together for the good of those who love the Lord and are called according to His purpose. And that just gives us hope and helps us find peace in the center of all that's going on in our lives. And so thank you for being such faithful listeners and for joining us and supporting us. And be great on purpose.
Have a great 24. Peace.